I was really excited to pull together this panel for a couple of reasons. One, because of our two guests that we have up here, but for another one, I appreciate that not everyone is as big of a fan of LinkedIn as I am. I love LinkedIn. If you follow me, I'm sorry, but I just love what LinkedIn gives us. And there was I'm not going to name names, but there was a sort of an influencer from this side sort of complaining about small comms teams and small teams out there, or teams of one. We shouldn't be celebrating teams of one or small comms teams. And I'm like, time out. That's actually not a solution that a comms team can help fix, right? Sometimes you are part of a small team. So I'm curious, who in the room is part of a team of three or less? Show of hands. Small team. There, round of applause. Right, it's a lot. Anybody else solo? Like one team person. See, there we go. Even so, it shows that it's not holding you back. Would everybody love to have more hands? Would everybody love to have more budget, more people, and all that? Of course. But sometimes we don't always have that capability. So it's how can you do more with the same, or actually look bigger than you are through use of technology and other tactics. So we've got Eleanor and Alex joining us. Just quickly, ladies, if you don't mind, do a quick intro of your title, where you're from, and a bit about your role at the organization.
Sure. So I'm Eleanor at Lotus. So as some of you might know, Lotus, the old heritage company, but we have a bright future for EV vehicles. So moving a big transition internally. I have not been with Lotus for a year yet. It's 11 months, so just almost. Very happy to be speaking here.
I'm Alex Kinnear-Meller. I'm the Global Head of Communications, apparently, at Doncaster's.
Did
you get a promotion up here?
I don't know, but I just made that up. It's just, you know, sounded impressive, I thought. So we've been going for 245 years, started in Sheffield in the UK by a guy called Daniel Doncaster. So we do very snazzy things like super alloys, ooh, and precision casting. So essentially, if you're in an aeroplane with a Rolls-Royce engine, you want to make sure that you've got a super alloy in that engine. It's not going to melt. And industrial gas turbines, and also things like turbocharger wheels in cars. So where metal is under pressure, and where you have to use high technology to cast that, that's where Doncaster excels. And there's only about four companies in the entire world that do it. And one of them is owned by Warren Buffett.
Yep. Thank you both. So when Alex and I first chatted, we connected over aircraft engines because I shared with her way back in another lifetime, I ran internal comms for Rolls-Royce out of the US. So I got to obviously spend a lot of time over here. And then we started talking shop about aircraft engines and alloys and all these other fun...
Thrilling subjects.
Fun things. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And you are a team of one.
Of one.
And you're a team of one
two
and
now.
Two. Yeah.
I know. Check me out.
So, but again, I think when we get into these conversations, and as a lot of you've seen, it's not about the size of the team. It is about the impact that you have on the organization. So when we think about scaling things, how do you make sure that every single team member gets impacted by it when your organization is growing, but your team may not be growing in your case? So how are you managing that scale aspect of communications?
It's a really tough question because it's not black and white.
I don't ask easy ones.
Yeah, get in there. It's collaborating with the other functions within the organization for sure. I think the first thing I did when I came into the role was work out who my key stakeholders were internally. So employee experience is a key one, HR, IT, the main functions that you keep engaged, and they act as your ear to the ground. And also whatever networks you can create globally really, really help.
Has there been a department that has really stepped up, that has really impressed you with their level of engagement or interest or enthusiasm?
I mean, naturally, HR, right? Yeah. Naturally, it's got to be that team. The talent and development team, I think, were hungry for it. So when I first joined Lotus, there was no such thing as internal comms, which was weird for a 75-year-old brand to not have anything. No one's even heard of internal comms internally. It was just dealt with by the PR team. So coming in and saying, okay, what voice can I give people? What do you need? And then to give them a single global platform for the first time was amazing. So the talent team have been amazing coming forward. But then it's kind of grown into every other little function in the organization. It's then like, oh, can we get involved? It's like, please.
Right, yes.
Yes.
And Alex, what about you? How has that, as the business has changed, as the organization has changed, how have you been able to scale?
I think you just stick with the basics. I genuinely feel that it doesn't matter if you're a team of, you know, you've got 25 people in the company or 3,000 in the company. You've got to know the basics. You've got to know, as I call them, my customer. Mm-hmm. So everybody in that business is my customer, wherever you are, if you're on the shop floor, whether you're the CEO. So understanding that customer, the profiling, understanding their wants, their likes, their dislikes, where are their pain points. And I think a lot of the time you're looking for, it used to be a world of problem solving. Now I think it's a world of sort of problem finding. And that's a really important part of what you do. And you have to lead with your personality. You have to lead with a curious mindset. You have to be asking those questions, because it's very easy to just sort of do a sort of broad stroke approach to things. So yeah, absolutely engage with all those groups, but it's how you engage with them as well. And you know, I'm not afraid to look silly. I'm sure I'm going to do it later today. But being able to ask those silly questions to really understand. So I think it doesn't matter how big you get, as long as you're having those honest conversations and you've got those key people of influence in mind, and you're seen as someone that people can be honest with, then most of the battle's won.
How are you able to have those? You just started honest. I also think those are a bit vulnerable. How do you have those vulnerable conversations? How do you go and ask someone, I don't know how this works, or help me understand?
I think you have to do your homework first. I mean, you're going to look a little bit silly if you don't understand. For example, I had to learn about engines. I mean, I kind of understood engines, but not at such a level. So you have to show respect for each department. So I'm a massive fan of just doing a little bit of research, trying to understand them. Everybody in this room is a salesperson. You know, whatever you do in a job, whether you're a nurse, a doctor, a teacher, you kind of have to do sales at some point. So using those techniques is incredibly important. So again, showing interest in the person you're talking to and showing that you've done the research. You know, it's like when I met you and I said, did you watch my film? Did you watch me? And you were like, oh yeah, of course I have. And I was like, oh, did you? But no, I'm not bothered. I don't mind looking foolish. But as long as I do it in an educated way, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. When I think about small teams, I go back to, anybody else worked in nonprofit, charity, communications, where it's very much you've got to work with what you've got. So I used to work for the American Cancer Society, like when I was right out of college. And I remember one day, one of my projects was to make a giant cigarette out of like tubes and paper and all this for an event that we were doing. And I think about those experiences you carry forward of when you don't have a lot of resources, how do you get to be resourceful?
Absolutely.
How do you do some of your own things? So we'll pass it back to you, Alex, for this one. How have you been able to be creative? And what are some of the ideas that have come up for you that allow you, in those constraints, to actually still produce amazing work?
Well, it's funny, you sort of say constraints, but actually I was thinking about it, that it's quite freeing. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got lot less levels of hierarchy. I mean, when I was an account director many years ago, I worked with Boots, and there's a lot of hierarchy within Boots, and that's great, it works for them. But when it's just me and Tegan, like my comms officer, we're like, hey, let's just give this a go. It's brilliant. And we did something with an employee engagement survey, and I just don't fall asleep. It was very exciting, I promise you. And, you know, here it comes again. It's October. Ta-da. So how do I
hope you did that in the video.
I did a little dance, everything. So how do I get, in July, people geared up and ready for this employee engagement survey? So I was just like, right, how can we be disruptive? And that's one thing I'm quite good at being, is being disruptive. And I'm sure everybody here can do it too. So we said, right, let's do a video. So we sweated the assets. I love this expression. Everyone knows me. Sweat the assets. I can do voiceovers. I can write copy. Tegan can do video editing. Do you know what? We'll make some films. So we do these films. And we'll do a voiceover on it. And in the middle of it, there's going to be a kitten that walks on into the video. And we did it. We genuinely did it. We're a huge manufacturing company. And halfway through this video, a kitten walks onto it. And there was a theme to the whole videos around the idea of, you know, the kitten was going to get off the step. And is it going to make it? Is it going to take the leap? Or we, you know, there was some sort of thread that went through it. But it was disruptive. Half of the people loved it. Half of them were like, what on earth is going on? Has Alex gone even more nuts than usual? But do you know what? 100% of people knew about the employee engagement survey. The year before, 84% knew. And even then, they were kind of like begrudgingly sort of like dragged along. sometimes you've got to be disruptive, and when you're a smaller team, you can afford to be a little bit, bit out there.
I also think when you wait for that moment that everyone's going to be happy with something you've done,
it's never going to happen.
You've killed the idea, too.
Absolutely. I was really lucky. I think I got the chief people officer on the right day. I think if I'd got him on the wrong day, he'd have been like, no kittens, Alex. But I did it, and it worked. And, people talked about it, and that's what I needed. So sometimes you just got to put your ego to the side and think, well, they might think Alex has gone a little bit bonkers, but at least I got the message across.
And Elmar, what about you? What about getting creative, whether it's constraints or freedom, as you pointed out, because of less structure, less hierarchy, of examples where that's paid off?
I completely agree. It's very freeing. It's brilliant. Yeah. But then it's also managing everything else. It's like you want to be as creative as possible with this one idea, but you're also balancing a million other requests in the background. For me, what I found really, really works is leaning into whatever's going on. So for us, launching our platform for First Up was a big disruptor, mainly because it was a huge change in behaviors for everybody. And we have different audiences from factory to office. So we just leaned into the fact that we were also launching a brand new car a week later. So we used First Up as our tease campaign and pushed it everywhere. And whoever was sitting at the coffee, you remember, Laura, sitting at the coffee machine for 5 seconds longer, I would grab them and they would all know about First Up. I think leaning into whatever's available, as you said, sweat the assets. I love that. I'm definitely stealing that.
Yeah.
Whatever was available, we would just grab and change in a different way or manipulate it in a different way. I was quite fortunate for not having any internal comms before, so I've been able to shape it however we wanted to shape it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because some of the criticisms I've heard or some of the challenges I know communicators have is, especially from leader standpoint, is, well, this is how we did it before.
Yeah.
With you, you didn't have a before that was any sort of established process. So how did that help you then build new? Like, how did you start from scratch?
It was great. It was perfect. Because nothing existed, but they had so much criticism of what, because it didn't exist. It was like, oh, well, we never hear from the company. We never hear from the leaders. Who's managing us? We don't have a clue. We don't know what our values are. We don't know what we're aiming for. So there was a lot there. It was kind of the best blank canvas to start with, because you knew where the pain points were. They were all there, right, ready for you. It was mere getting the leadership team on side first. I remember before I even walked into the building, our chief commercial officer said, oh, you're already going to be your biggest advocate. It was like, great, this is perfect. We've already got buy-in. So for me, it was easy. It was just saying, okay, listening. I think we said in the last session of just listening, just being that person that will spend 5 seconds with people and saying, okay, what does internal comms look like to you? What do you really want to hear about? What's missing? And where can I help?
Yeah, I think sometimes as communicators, we suffer from this curse of access.
Yeah.
We have access to leaders and know them in ways that the average employee simply never does, never has that opportunity. And we did these focus groups with one of our customers and was with their production team and then some of their skilled trades at one of their factories. And we played a video from their CEO. This is a company of hundreds of thousands of people. Played a video of the CEO, and the employee was like, one of the employees said, oh, that's what he sounds like.
Yeah.
Had no idea even what their leaders sounded like, let alone who they are and what's behind them. So I do think it is a chance to showcase that in new ways that they haven't had that access before.
Yeah, it's really sad as well, I guess. That's starting it bad. But no, we have a mixture of leaders. If you have the leaders that are naturally very good in front of cameras or in front of people, it's easy. If you have the other leaders that maybe aren't as comfortable, which we find generally more the engineering side or the manufacturing side, aren't as comfortable being the spokesperson or being in front of a camera, it's more showing them the impact that they've had and maybe making it more relatable, more personal from them. Because as you said, you hear them in a meeting and you're like, this is exactly what your team need to hear. Just say that. Just be a human.
Yeah.
I
think it's funny you say that, because I hear that from communicators all the time of, we need to humanize our leaders. I'm like, what have we done to them to make them not human? Like, what have we done, or what have they done to themselves?
Maybe they're not human.
That's a good point.
Why is it back of the head?
Yeah. Very selfish question. coming up, and this is a bit different for both of you, so I'll phrase it a bit differently. But for you, Eleanor, it's more of a build, and for Ox, it's more of an add-on. But what role has First Up played in your case, building the comms, and then Alex, in your case, sort of building on what was already there? So back to you, Eleanor. What role did your First Up platform play in actually giving it that initial structure?
What, internal comms?
Yes.
Yeah, everything. It put down the real front foundations for us to do this. Having the global platform for everybody to be able to access has been amazing, easily. Before, obviously, there was no internal comms platform. There was no internal comms person or department. And we're a very born British, raised globally company. So we are now very global, from the US to China. And no one was speaking to anyone, because no one was able to, because we didn't have the platforms. We have teams for one half of the world, and we have Lark for the other half of the world, and no one talks to anyone. So having First Up was like, okay, here's your platform, run with it. Mm-hmm. And it was like little simple challenges, like, I don't know if Alice is in the room, but she gave me a really good idea for Lotus in the Wild, which was literally, if you saw a lotus out on the street, just take a photo and share it. And it's easily the most engaged platform, the engaged topic we have. Mm-hmm. So it's really been the first one for people to feel part of a wider organization. So it's been invaluable.
So knowing that, it sounds like for a lot of them, the mobile aspect was
huge.
What they grabbed onto, because it gave them that in the moment to, if they spotted.
Yeah, definitely.
Vehicles out there.
Definitely. And also as well, the addition of our guys in the factory, for them to be able to kind of capture that information. People that have never been communicated to, you're right. They've never heard our leaders talk, because why would they? They're on the factory, they're not in the corporate offices, mm-hmm. They wouldn't know. So to be able to use First Up or Lotus Link, they've been able to kind of really interact and hear those people, which has been great.
And to you, Alex, what role has the platform played for you?
Well, when I joined, there was SharePoint. And we still have SharePoint, you know, there was always a place in my heart for SharePoint. And we had an app. But again, it was quite clunky. No disrespect for the people who put it in. But it was quite hard to work. It wasn't intuitive. So it kind of had been rolled out, but it wasn't really, I didn't really push it too much until we came across Charlie. I said, I'll give you a shout out. Where are you, Charlie, mate? There you go, Charlie. So Charlie called me in November and we started talking to First Up. The big thing for us is always going to be the translation. Mm. What a win. I mean, it's as simple as that. So being able to have the CEO's message, any message we get, instantly translated to the user's device in India, China, mm-hmm. We're across America, Germany, is just a huge cost saving. It's as simple as that. So a lot of the time, I remember I was just speaking to Alex on the way here, and I remember a chap I heard at the State of the Sector talking about Andrew Hubbard, saying, you know, align your communication strategy not with your communication outcomes, but with your business outcomes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's how you're going to get that buy-in. And we know we do it, but to voice it so succinctly, I rather like that. So just to be able to say to the CEO, listen, we're dropping at least 60K on XYZ translations. It's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's gone. And then, again, we have to think globally as well. But we can still make mistakes. And I will just notice something the other day, and I'm quite happy to say it, but you know, you said born in the UK, raised globally, was that?
Yeah,
what
born British, raised globally.
Born British, I love that. It's probably, a standard saying. We had something go out about spring. One of our wellbeing messages went out last week, and someone said, and it was a lovely message, I was off, and it went out saying, you know, now spring's here, here are things you can do while spring's here, and I'm like, they're not thinking globally. And I wasn't there, and I wanted to say, it's not spring everywhere. So we can still all make mistakes. And so again, I would just say that as a watch out. You know, you want to empower people to use it, put their content in there, but you still need to steward. You still need to do that little nudging. So I will be having a conversation tomorrow, but it'll be fine. But it is hard, because I think we never thought globally before First Up. So it's a compliment to First Up. I think that was very much driven from a UK, American point of view, but certainly UK. And yeah, we need to think differently. So occasionally I have to bang the drum and say, think globally. Even things like someone saying 4 o'clock, I'm like, GMT, EST, what are we doing, guys? But again, it's that's what you have to do. And that's another challenge. That is a challenge when you're a small team. I have to meet with the head of IT, Gavin, great guy, and talk to him about the way they're putting their comms out because they're not thinking globally. Yeah. And sometimes you're so tired and you're like, I do external comms as well, so I do the PR as well. And you just feel like you're repeating yourself. But remember, we're all in this together. So, yeah, I need a little badge saying think global.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree. It is such a challenge, but governance is so important when you use First Up. And I think having that structure in place,
yeah.
But also if you frame it around, I'm just here to support you.
Absolutely.
I'm here, I just want to make sure that we cover the organization, everyone's happy. And then people pay attention to your comms.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got the whole spiel.
You got it down.
Got it good.
But anyway, it's really important. I think, again, that's the other advantage of being a small team is that, again, I just was being recorded back there, and as a head of global communications, it sounds very fancy, malancy, and wonderful, and I am very strategic, but I am actually occasionally posting stuff on there as well. And I like pulling down the data on a Monday. I mean, Gabby's smiling at me because I'm always like, oh, I've done this thing and I've created this image. But again, I'm in touch with it every day. Mm. And that's probably what makes us experts at it, because we're not in our ivory tower, not aware what's going on. We're there.
Yeah.
And I've got a good story about Valentine's Day for you if we have time.
Okay. We'll have time for that. It was something you talked about as benign as that announcement about spring was. Mm. That's very easy for an employee to feel perhaps alienated by it.
Yeah.
Because like, it's not spring where I am. But also, it's an easy conversation to have, like you said, to fix and almost poke some fun at it. But there was something you talked about with translations that I think, how many of in the room do you do translations either inside the First Up platform or outside the First Up platform? Right, it's becoming more and more important for it. But I also see people using the automatic translations, it's like, well, it's not perfect. Hmm. And I'm like, well, is it good enough? And then yes. Yeah. Because a lot of times that all people really want is something tailored to them. It doesn't have to be perfect for them. And there's a really great Freakonomics podcast episode from a couple years ago where they talked about the science of language and people knowing multiple languages and what does it mean when someone speaks a broken language versus perfect language. And it's only in the last decade or so has that really mattered to us, that as long as you could get the point across, that's what mattered to people. And I think that's that, just that little bit of extra effort that employees appreciate, whether it's the right season or in their language, makes all the difference
Absolutely.
In the world. What's your Valentine's Day story? We're going to make time for this.
You know, when you sent me these questions beforehand, like they've all changed, by the way. I mean, you asked all really good ones in the first session.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh. It was something around feedback. How do you get feedback on your platform? And it was a really nice one. So obviously Valentine's Day, 14th of Feb, and Tegan and I were like, right, what are we going to do? And I was like, oh, God, cause we can't really be too jokey in our company. It's quite a...
Humor's tricky.
Yeah, it's really tricky. Yeah. And again, I'm very outgoing in my company. I'm not normal at Doncaster's. There are a few of us amongst them, but most people are like, hello, hello. So
is that how meetings begin?
I'm like, hi. Oh, shut up. So it's Valentine's Day, and I'm like, go on, do it, do it, do it. So we get like a heart with super alloy on it, and we're like, puns for Valentine's Day. I know, but anyway. And I said, oh, you know, let's do some puns for Valentine's Day. And we had things like, you are my cobalt to my nickel. Together we make a super alloy. And you're my turbocharger to my engine. But the reason
I
knew...
Did you get a call from HR about
this? No, it was fine. They were loving it. But the fact, we had to keep it. But the thing I loved was we had the president of Asia and Europe write a comment which said, I shall be using these tonight. And I was like, that's the best feedback you could ever get.
Yeah.
It's just like, and I just, it made my heart sing. But again, it goes back to what you were talking about earlier about when you were writing down words and stuff. And I really wanted to write the word role model. And we have to role model the behaviors we expect when people are using this platform. And to have Indy write that, I was just like, it honestly made my heart sing. And it just, he was an executive member, you know, talking the talk and walking the walk. And that meant the world.
Yeah. So when we talk about you, Eleanor, about things like this, about finding creative ways to engage your team in their language, like you said, with this one, I'm your nickel and you're my cobalt.
I love that. That's great.
What have you been able to do at Lotus that's sort of like using your, you know, we know that there's dangers in jargon, but there's also jargon can be unifying in organizations. What have you seen from a creative approach like that about engaging your team members and getting them excited? You mentioned the Lotus, like finding the cars out.
Yeah.
But what are some other things that have worked?
That's a really good question. I feel like we do loads that's very product-centric.
You can call a friend if you need the, like...
Hi, Laura. I think the Lotus in the world has probably been our most successful, easily. But obviously, since launching first up to Lotus, we have launched a brand new car, we've listed the company, we've done loads in the space of 6 months. So it's just any kind of bit of engagement.
With the launching of that new car, what did that some of that comms look like in the platform?
It was really cool. And it was like my proudest moment with working with Lotus so far, I mean, in my 11 months. Because we used that as our big bang to launch. Mm-hmm. First up, or Lotus Link. So we knew that we had a week kind of grace period to get people onto the system before we launched the new car. So that was our, if you're not on Lotus Link or with First Up, you're not seeing EMEA, which was our new car. So it was kind of our big bang that I think worked quite well. And I think as well, because we were using boring old Outlook emails with just the logo in the middle, and that was it. Mm-hmm. It looked rubbish, it looked awful. And then moving on, our first ever comms through First Up was this new car launch with these beautiful images and all the text all on brand and everything. Everyone was like, yeah, that works. That really works.
Well, because then that's then the alignment with your external brand that aligns with your internal brand.
Absolutely. And going back to what I said at the start is we've got this super rich heritage, but moving into this premium performance and technology brand, it's still the same Lotus, but it's slightly just new and modern. That we have to be as premium internally as we are externally. So anything that we say or do, all of our cars, all of our branding, everything has to relate.
Yeah. Now we're getting to your feedback question, Alex, that I had on my list. So we'll pass it back to Eleanor. How have you used the platform to get employee feedback? Or what sort of feedback have you received from leaders or people in the organization about the platform?
We receive feedback a lot. I think for me, the major telling point is how many people then spark engagement with it. Not just in the form of likes or comments or shares or whatever. It's more, I know I need to tell my team this bit of important comms, how can I do it? And I'm like, well, you've got Lotus Link, we can do it. And they're like, I didn't think about it. I didn't think we could do that. It's like, of course, it's for you. Like, we did this for the business. Like this, actually, last week, we had a really good talk with our supply chain team in the UK, and they wanted to be able, they were relying on emails and just team briefings in person, but they have like 200 employees around the UK. So I said we'd set them up with their own dedicated topic and their own audience, and you run it. It's your baby now. You do it. And I've been seeing the engagement last week, and it's just absolutely taken off. It's been incredible. So to see that, I get the same feeling as you. It warms my heart a little bit to be like, yeah, you're using it. Great. And we get so much feedback from them, and the team leaders are still really engaged, and it's great. So it's seeing that and then promoting it and sharing it so that other teams realize that it's for them as well.
Yeah. Other than giving your leaders Valentine's Day lines, what are some other ways that you've received feedback about the First Up platform?
Yeah. I think certainly being able to get comments from, I mean, I know it's really basic, but it is literally just being able to get comments from people who wouldn't necessarily be able to make those comments. Mm-hmm. So knowing that there is this sort of handheld equity, as I was saying earlier, about the fact that the people on our shop floors have the opportunity now to be able to speak openly and positively or whatever they want to say is so special. And I know I joke about everyone being very serious, but you know, we're all humans, and everybody's just so proud of that company. And the comments are fantastic, people liking things. I think also, I was thinking about the other day that there will be certain personalities, and I completely get this, that won't want to press like on something. Mm-hmm. But when I look at the data and I see that it's been opened or it's been looked at, that's enough for me. You know, you're going to have, I don't work in a media company, I work in a high position manufacturing company. The personality types are not always going to want to press like on something, mm-hmm. but being able to have that data in the background and be able to see what's been engaged with, and I think we have very high engagement rates with our communications because we're very selective about what we put out there. Mm-hmm. The Valentine's thing was a bit of fun. We don't often do that because, you know, we are, you know, we have serious messages we need to get out there. But again, that data in the background is very helpful. The insights can really help drive that sort of being able to speak to the executive team and say, right, this has been engaged with, this is working, etc., or what hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have to be very careful with balancing. A bit of fun, yep. but very sensible.
Yeah, has anybody in here also heard of the 1-9-90 rule? Has anyone heard of this? So basically, if you've got 100% of your population, like 1% will create, 9% will respond, and 90% almost look invisible, like they just sort of work.
Yeah, that's how it is.
So it's a lot of in the community world, even communities that are out there, that same model comes pretty close. So obviously, as communicators, we're part of the 1% of the 1% that are in there creating. But for some people, I'm glad you talk about comments, because for me, that's sort of the OG user-generated content. Yeah. Someone may never post a photo, they may never share something like that, but them going in and commenting is them participating. And for some, it's the first and only time they can participate.
Absolutely. Even if it's a complaint or saying, you know, Alex, why? And I like the fact that on ours, we're very, very, I'm very visual on it. So people will say, hi, Alex, I've noticed this, and or why is this not on here? And I will openly reply in that comment. Mm. It's really important that, again, we role model those behaviors because it is about opening things. And remember, we're on a journey as well. You know, we're a fantastic manufacturing company, but we are slowly, you know, we have 69% of our workforce are deskless. So, you know, we're slowly pulling those people in. But again, they're working on their personal mobiles as well. Mm-hmm. So we've got those additional challenges. You know, we can't hand out. We have screens, obviously, in the cafeterias, and we also have iPads. But, you know, we've got a lot of work to do to try and tweak that culture and give people the trust. Trust in them as much as we, you know, trust in the leadership that they can go on it. So, you know, we're getting there. Lots of work to do, but I'm enjoying it.
So we've got about 5 minutes left, and if anybody has any questions for Eleanor or Alex, please raise your hand. I've got plenty of questions, but this is not about me. This is about you. So please raise your hand if you have questions. Charlie's back here. He's been practicing his mic running, like I said, for the past 6 weeks, and Bolu as well. While you're thinking of oh, we got a question. Perfect. Raise your hand so they can see you. There you go. Yeah, introduce yourself for us.
Hiya. Thank you. I'm Amanda Dunmore. I'm from BAM. We're about to launch tomorrow, actually. So I've got my colleague Ross.
Congratulations.
So we're really excited. One of the challenges you just said is about having those remote employees that don't have work devices, it's personal devices. Mm. Do you have any kind of suggestions that you've used to really incentivize those people to use their personal device and how that you've maybe made that happen?
One of the things we're doing at the moment is, I can say it's WhatsApp is a challenge. So I understand why people use WhatsApp. You know, it's free, and so that's been used in the past in parts of our company. Now, we had a challenge, and I mentioned this last year, where someone pretended to be the CEO, and via WhatsApp had contacted one of our GMs, sounded like the CEO, it said his name on it, looked good, and he was asking for financials. Now, thank goodness the GM was like, hang on, Mike, why are you texting me? You know, and he was sensible enough to say, let's set up a call, and he disappeared. So WhatsApp is used. The challenge I have this year is I'm going to be doing this as well, working with IT, is to try and get leaders on board to understand how, no offense WhatsApp, how unsafe WhatsApp is compared to First Up, compared to the connection, our system's called the connection. So really just breaking down what they're currently using and understanding how First Up can do it. So you can set up a topic, so shift working on Tuesday night, and then you use the comments almost like WhatsApp. So telling people, like, for example, also with WhatsApp is it has access to your contacts. So pushing those security buttons and saying, you know, hang on. And also you reveal your telephone number to everybody. If I'm working, I don't want to give my personal number out to people, but people do. So again, it's just an education piece. So it's something I'm working on this year alongside IT and our senior leadership to just slowly pull people into understanding how actually First Up is going to be useful for that. if they're not using WhatsApp and they refuse to use their mobile phone, then we've got another challenge. But really for me, it's leveraging how good this is and how that it doesn't access your data on your phone. So really understanding that it's basically a link to a URL. And we have sites in Germany, for example, and they're very, very strong and very hot on their security. So again, it's really just showing the benefits of this versus the negatives of the other. But it, really, it's a campaign.
Mm-hmm. I think very similar. We have a large majority of our organization that are factory-based. Don't even have emails, let alone any kind of access to anything. To my knowledge, they're not using WhatsApp. I'd hope not, based on the things you just said. but we have a really big problem with getting them into onto Lotus Link at the moment. And it's a big kind of population for us. And it was a major point for us when we were developing and integrating our system of we need it to be able to be accessed by our guys in the factory. Mm. It is one of my key points for this year. Our engineering teams need a bit of love at the moment, and I think bringing them into our platform will give them that. You're right, it's separate topics for them, perfect. It's the education piece. I think a lot of them feel like it's not for us, it's not for the guys on the line, it's for the office, it's for the leaders, it's not for us. Why would I need to be on this? So it's an education piece to say, well, how do you get your payslips? You need it's here, it's on the app. So it's a whole education piece, and I think myself with the employee experience team and HR team will probably be doing a lot more on the ground education with them.
Yeah, I think also with regards to WhatsApp, I need to clarify, it's purely for like shift working. It's not information going backwards and forwards.
Okay,
oh God, no. No, it's more like, are you working tonight? Who's doing the shifts, right, et cetera. So certainly not any secure data that goes through it, but the fact that they're using it, just have those communications with people who don't have emails. Yeah. So again, yeah, absolutely. It is an education piece. And again, it's that FOMO, massive believer in fear of missing out. So the housekeeping. And I would say sometimes it's the negative stuff that really is the positive stuff. So say if you've got someone senior leaving in the business and that comes up on the screen in the cafeteria, I want people to go, flipping heck, I want to know more. And I want them to be able to download the app and go, you know, but the fact is, it's sometimes you want to put nice positive stuff out there, but actually sometimes the negative stuff is a really good incentive to get people to want to download it.
Mm-hmm. Really agree. Oh, one more question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, ladies, for the great insights. Also big communications teams can have the struggle not reporting directly into the CEO. And it's the case more often in case of small communications teams. So where do you report to? How do you make sure you have a seat at the table? And how do you influence the CEO and the leadership team? Which are the methods? So for example, you know, you can use first up insights, data, what other ways you can influence these leaders? Thank you.
Over to you.
Thanks for that. actually, I think I'm quite fortunate. My leaders are really engaged with it. They are huge ambassadors for Lotus Link, and they love the fact that we've got it. They're so passionate about the culture of the company, so they see the real benefits of having Lotus Link to the company to recreate this. As I said, we've done so much within 6 months that it's almost impossible for an employee to keep up with if we don't have this. So it's an evident that we need it. It's great. I forgot that question. I report into the exec director of PR and comms, where I'm an only internal comms in a PR team of like 15 or something. I have to shout quite loudly. but then she reports directly into the CEO. So it's an easy kind of line in. And as I said, before I even set foot in the door, he was already a fan. So it was kind of easy. It's giving them that data, and I report directly to him once a month. Okay, last month our stats were, and our engagement rates were this. This month it's higher, and we kind of traffic light it for him, considering I only get like 5 minutes with him because I'm shouting so loudly. It's then like, okay, quickly, this is, yes. So, pretty easy.
I report into the chief counsel, actually. So she is head of risk. So unlike a lot of people that would go into HR, for example, I actually go into the legal team, and she goes straight into the CEO. She's very, very hot on comms. She's very good at it, which is great to have that.
Also pretty unique.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's a very bright lady. And so I report into her. She's very good at supporting me in with regards to my messaging, etc. Would I like to have more voice at the table? I think we all would, because by the nature of business, again, our business is a very lean business, you know, that we work in lean manufacturing. That's what we do. So, but again, I am very much listened to, which is fantastic. And I can talk to the CEO occasionally. But again, data drives everything, doesn't it? So really, if I can get that data to prove the worth, that's everything. And sometimes it's just anecdotal. And I remember, and I said this earlier, that one of the GMs said, oh, it's really annoying, but it's quite good, isn't it? And that was enough for me, because the fact that they actually were like, you know, he didn't want to be negative, but he's good. He's a critical thinker, let's put it that way. But he actually couldn't really fault it. And I loved that.
A win is a win.
Yeah, a win is a win.
Well, we are at time for this session. Thank you both. They are around for the rest of the day as well. So if you want to talk more shop with both of them, can we get a round of applause for Eleanor and Alex?